Once again, the great song, Amen, written by the man we remember today. That was the Soweto Gospel Choir singing Amen. But now we turn our attention once again to the Middle East, because there's so much that has been revealed over the last week about what happened there. The world was hit with the deaths of the three young Israelis, Ayel, Yifrash, Gilad, Sha'ar, and Naftali Frankel. But then Muhammad Abu Qadir was beaten, before that, Tariq Qadir, excuse me, who goes to high school in Tampa, was beaten up by the Israeli police after his cousin, Muhammad Abu Qadir, was killed by settlers in revenge for the other killing, and it set off a wave of things. We're talking to the Abu Qadir family today, and when some of them returned to Baltimore from Palestine, we start our conversation off with Leah Tarachinsky, who is the Israel-Palestine correspondent for the Real News Network and a filmmaker whose work is focusing on a new project on the side of the road. And Leah, welcome back to the Mark Steiner Show. Good to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Mark.
410-319-8888 is the number here. You can join us also at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. In a few minutes, Hakim Abu Qadir, a cousin of Tariq, will join us along with Maria Baroudi, the aunt of both of those young boys. Leah, so it's in the wake of the killing of Muhammad Abu Qadir and the beating of Tariq Qadir, and I saw this morning for the very first time the beating that Tariq Qadir took by the Israeli police that had him on the ground and seemed to pummel him for like 10 minutes or more. It's a pretty shocking video. I guess you've seen that.
Yeah, but I think that there's so much attention paid to this incident because Tariq Abu Qadir has American citizenship. In the same evening, in the same place, they beat dozens of other people the same way. I mean, this is a daily occurrence here. And in the month prelude to the war that started yesterday, when the IDF was holding its biggest military operation in the West Bank in a decade, they invaded thousands of homes, destroyed hundreds of them from the inside, often breaking things just for the sake of it, and yeah, beating people, many, many people, for no reason, with total impunity.
So, you know, what you just said, Leah, I want to kind of explore for a moment before we talk about what you've been witnessing, both on in the Palestine and in Israel. But you said these kind of beatings are regular. So the horrendous beating we saw on that videotape, you're saying and positing is nothing new. This is nothing. This is something that happens every day. It's been happening for years to Palestinian kids on the ground and people.
Yeah, I mean, the occupation has been going on for more than 45 years. Occupation means not just soldiers getting bored in the sun and stopping, you know, little old ladies to get their IDs at checkpoints. I'm talking about all of the brutal force of the fourth largest military in the world, exercised with almost total impunity against a largely unarmed civilian population. So, yeah, you know, there's nothing specifically, you know, there's nothing particular about these particular soldiers, these particular special unit army, special unit police officers that made them beat this. It's just that when you practice two generations of fighters, and in Israel we have total conscription for men and women, and practice them in this idea that you can exercise whatever violence you want against Palestinians, because no one is going to hold you accountable and nothing will happen to you, then you have it on every level. This explains the vigilante attacks that we've seen on the streets here for the first time, you know, in this country's history. We've seen mass mobilization of angry racist and neo-fascist mobs going bus to bus, taxi to taxi, you know, stopping them and asking if there's Arabs on board, and attacking and taking off the bus anyone who's Arab and beating them. You know, there was a letter that was written to one of the members of parliament by a Palestinian young woman who was on the light trail in Jerusalem when a mob of neo-fascists started, surrounded the train and started yelling, "Are there Arabs on the train?" And the people on the train tried to get one of the women who had a hijab on and was holding a baby to get off the train, to sacrifice her to the angry mob, not even questioning for one second what's going on here. why are we taking an innocent woman off the train who's holding a baby, for Christ's sake, and we're throwing her into the hands of an angry neo-fascist mob that's yelling death to Arabs? So we're seeing that on the civilian level, from the hilltop youth who attack Palestinians with impunity. We've seen it in the army. We've seen it in the police, as you showed with Tarek Abu Khdeir. This is what occupation out of control looks like. When you go and you bomb Gaza, like they did yesterday, on the government level, and inside Israel, people are cheering on as the televisions are syndicating all of the Israeli army footage straight from the drone to your television set. What do you expect? Yes, I'm grateful that the world is paying attention to the fact that Tarek was beaten because he has an American citizenship. But this is happening on such a level that I don't know a single Palestinian person, I don't know a single Palestinian male who hasn't been beaten or imprisoned by the various aspects of the occupation.
I mean, what you just did, Leah Tereshinsky, I think for all of our listeners across this region and the nation and the world who are listening, is to paint a portrait that you do not often hear coming from the Israeli side of the borders, talking about what's actually going on and the real dangers. And as I wrote to you actually last night, one of the things that worried me from 1967 till now has been that this occupation of Palestine and Gaza and the West Bank is destroying the soul and heart of the Jewish people itself by eating itself inside out because of the oppression that we're causing in the West Bank. And we're joined here now by Maria Baroudi, who is married into the Abu Khidir family. Her husband, who is currently in the mourning tent in Shufat in Jerusalem, is cousin of both the Abu Khidirs who have recently been involved there. And I'm sorry, Maria's daughter. Yes,
yes.
She
yes.
could not make it today. Hakim Abu Khidir is with us. He is cousin to Tariq Abu Khidir. And yes. Good to have you both in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you
so much for having us.
So, and I'm sorry, I just saw the note. I thought you looked much too young to be Maria. That's why I said, maybe you took some pills and got younger.
No.
But
no,
good to have you in the studio.
Thank you very much.
So talk a bit about the communications, Hakim, that you have had with your family in Palestine.
Before the incident or after?
After. Since the murder and since the beating.
Since the murder, I've kept contact with Tariq's father and a couple other of my cousins. Before the murder itself, I spoke to Tariq and I told him, stay off the streets, stay safe, stay with your father, make sure that you're nowhere around it. And he told me, yeah, you know, I'm just going to be with Muhammad and Adnan, my other cousin. I told him, okay, just stay safe. And then not even a day or two later, he's arrested and beaten in the videos going viral. So from that standpoint, I just I didn't know how to feel. And it just kind of hit home for me, honestly, because I grew up with a kid. I was there in the hospital when he was born, Baltimore born and raised. So it just kind of...
And it was shocking to me, and just as a personal note again, before we turn... Your name is...
I'm Sakia Abu Khdeir.
Sakia. Well, it wasn't on my sheet. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Okay.
And so one of the things that I remember, and I wrote to my friend Ali Zagheb this morning, was that when he had this gathering at his house just a month or so ago to celebrate the graduation of his daughter, the Abu Khidir family was there.
Yes.
The elders of the family were there.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that, and I wrote to him this morning to kind of my own shock of realizing that the family was sitting there in that garden.
Mm-hmm.
Is for this multiracial gathering mm-hmm. of human beings celebrating some joy in a Palestinian family in our midst, mm-hmm. and that was there. So I just wanted to put that out there. So, and what communication do you have with your father?
I have been able to talk to my father through Facebook, Skype, actually, and through the phone as well. And he's just been telling me about, you know, participating in the mourning with our family over there for Mohammed's death. And being able to see Tariq after he was released, and all of the attacks that are taking place right outside of his family home in Shafat.
So, I want to talk a bit about what the politics of all this at the moment and what is actually going on, but there's a quick question I have to ask, because there's been so much controversy around this particular incident with Tariq before we talk about the whole incident, what this represents both politically and socially and what's happening. Where was Tariq?
I mean,
the disputes have been, the Israeli army are saying that he was part of the demonstration, he was throwing rocks, he was throwing tear gas back at the Israeli police and army, and then your family is saying he was dragged out of a garden, and I don't know what Leah knows, we'll hear from Leah, but what do you know?
He was in a yard. Here's the thing with us, where our house is located, in Shafat. The mosque where Muhammad was kidnapped is directly across the street. So Tariq is on the other side of the street, which is in the midst of the conflict. It's inevitable to not be involved if you're right there. If you live right on the main street, it's going to be in front of your doorstep. Not just my family, but all the other families in Shafat.
Is a neighborhood in East Jerusalem that is in many ways now being, I'll let Leah talk about this, being sucked in and incorporated into Greater Jerusalem by the Israelis. But East Jerusalem is where most of the Palestinians live, in the city of Jerusalem.
Yes.
Right, so just to be clear for our listeners. Yeah.
He was in the yard. He had the keffiyeh around his face because of the tear gas that was being thrown. And not just him. It was a lot of other kids and adults out there wearing the same thing.
To protect their airways. And, you know, where my father is in Shafat, their house has been attacked with tear gas. There's infants. My cousins have children that are living with them. And they've had to, you know, try and protect themselves and their children from, you know, the tear gas. That's what Tariq was wearing to try and protect himself as well.
And Leah, from all the reporting you've done and what the papers are saying, what people are saying in the Palestinian community and the Israeli community, what do you know about the specifics of this before we get into the whole kind of larger political issue here?
What do I know about what specifically?
What we were just talking about in terms of what actually happened.
Where Tariq was when he was beaten?
Yeah.
I don't know. Look, I'm covering everything at the same time. I have no idea where Tariq was, but I'm listening to you guys, and I understand that it's important for you to express that Tariq was not protesting. But I don't know. It's very likely that he was just sitting at home. But if he was protesting, I just want to point to your audience that it's not only the Palestinian peoples, like any other peoples on earth, right to protest. At this point, it's inevitable. The exact same place where Muhammad was kidnapped the day before, an 8-year-old kid was almost kidnapped by the exact same people. They admitted it in their interrogation that they were trying to kidnap an 8-year-old and kill him and burn him. We saw from the coroner's report that of Muhammad's coroner's report that they forced him to drink gasoline and then poured the rest of the gasoline on his body and set him on fire from the inside and the outside. And this is not just one group of six crazy teenagers. The same thing happened near Umm al-Fahim. It happened in Nablus. And yesterday there was another settler who tried to kidnap a kid, a 16-year-old killed in Bethlehem. This is now a phenomenon, and this is what's new about this conflict. So yes, maybe Tariq specifically was not protesting, but if he was, what is wrong with that? People are fighting for their freedom. He should have been protesting.
Right, and I think no matter what, that's an important point to make, Leah, before we turn back to Hakeem, because the beating that he and other Palestinians...
That's something you should be punished for.
Right.
By brutal beating.
She's right. I definitely agree with her. Even if he was protesting, there's still no justification for the beating that he received. If he was in handcuffs, okay, he was in handcuffs, but you definitely used too much force.
Yes. And if, you know, with Israel being a democratic society, you know, we know that there's supposed to be basic human rights, right? You know, a minor should not be brutally beaten, even if he was protesting. No matter, you know, if he was throwing rocks, whatever. But that isn't even the case of what happened. But just to make a point, even if people are believing that that's what happened, that doesn't warrant a vicious attack, what Tarek experienced.
I guess what this also unleashes, Leah, and I want to talk a bit about the political ramifications of this, and even if we bleed over into the next half an hour for a minute, is that is what you were describing earlier about the kind of racist attacks on Palestinians inside of Israel taking place and the potential kidnappings. But what is unfolding here, both internally in terms of the politics and the sense of being in Israel itself? Can you analyze a bit about what's happening and why?
Well, you know, I'm no expert, but from covering this is my conclusion. I put the blame squarely at the feet of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who 2 days after the kidnapping of the three teenagers knew that they were dead and knew the people that he was going to charge for their murder. They had the names already 2 days later, and they had shown it to the top journalists in the country and forbade them from publishing those names, dragging us and all of Israel and the families of these poor three teenagers through 17 days of false hope. Every single day, all of the press, all of the public was participating in this campaign of hope. You know, posters were being flung here everywhere, you know, turn our boys. The whole operation in the West Bank, which saw almost every Palestinian village invaded and every city invaded by the Israeli army, thousands of homes broken into and things destroyed all over the place, people beaten, you know, all of that in the name of returning these three teenagers while the government knew that they were dead. So when you put, I don't even know how to translate it, but when you, you know, instigate people for 3 weeks, following in front of the television what's going to happen, begging and praying. This is a very religious country, yeah? People were praying that these kids are okay. Meanwhile, he knew they were dead, and he forbade the press from publishing it so that he can pull off the prelude to what we now are watching is developing into a full-blown war. And of course, when you do that, what do you expect? People are all stirred up. They blame all the Arabs because we learned from grade one that the Arabs are one monolith of one people that all act the same. They just want to kill the Jews. We don't know anything about the Palestinian people as a public. So what do you expect? Of course it is going to lead to vigilante attacks, people taking the law into their own hands. Meanwhile, the government may have called, you know, the Abu Khdeir family to say that they condemn the murder, but so what? After the massacre in 1994, all the politicians said, we're so sorry, we're so sorry. They're not going to go door to door looking for the perpetrators by blowing up their homes the way they do to the Palestinians in the West Bank. They're not going to punish the killers by, you know, exploding their homes in front of their families like they did to the people who were not even charged for the murder of the teens. So the words, in the end, are completely empty, especially because they come from the mouth of politicians that daily incite against Palestinian people. So this is where we're at right now. And the last 48 hours, we've seen a mass bombardment of Gaza. In my neighborhood here on the south of Tel Aviv, in Yafa, there were 6 rockets that fell. The rockets got as high up as Khadera. 23 Palestinians that we know of, as of this morning, have been killed in the Gaza Strip. And Israelis are sitting in bars watching the drone footage and then, you know, asking the barman to switch to the Germany-Brazil game.
Listeners, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. We can take a very brief break, and I'm asking Leah Terachansky and Zakia Abu Qadir and Hakim Abu Qadir to stay for just a little bit longer so we can conclude this, and you can join us here at 410-319-8888. What you're hearing is a very important live understanding and broadcast about what's happening right now in Israel and Palestine and with the Abu Qadir family here in studio. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're going out with Blowin' in the Wind, an appropriate song by Bob Dylan that was recorded on this day in 1962, and it is Blowin' in the Wind.
Before it's washed to the sea, how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free?
Again, Bob Dylan, that song, Blow in the Wind, very prescient song for almost any time. First recorded in 1962. We are here with Leah Tarachansky, who is Israel-Palestine correspondent for the Real News Network, and you need to go to realnewsnetwork.com and check out her work and others there as well. She's a filmmaker currently working on a project called The Side of the Road. Hakim Abu Khadir is with us. He is cousin of Tariq Abu Khadir, and they grew up together here in Baltimore. Maria, I'm sorry, Zakia is with us, the daughter of Maria Rudy, and they are married. Her father is a member of the Abu Khadir family, and who is currently now in the morning tent in Shafat in Jerusalem, and cousin to both of the Abu Khadirs who have recently been involved in the conflict there, one killed and one murdered and one beaten. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We have about 10 minutes left in this segment. And so I just want to come back, and I'm curious, you know, we talked off the air for a moment in a very personal way, Hakim, about how you felt growing up with Tariq, seeing these pictures of your cousin.
It definitely brought a chill to my back, honestly. When you see something like that happen to your family member, somebody that's really close to you, you don't know how to react to something like that. And when the video surfaced, before they even said it was Tariq, I was like, that's Tariq. I knew it was Tariq. I know. I had a feeling it was Tariq because I didn't hear from him. And then it was a shock when it was proven that it was Tariq, because the videos that were taken of the beating were from my uncle. My uncle took one of the videos. So after hearing that, I made phone calls. Honestly, I went out of my way because I had to go out of my way. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, and I'm very upset at the U.S. justice system for letting this happen, and just standing aside.
And Maria Brody has just walked into the studio. Let's try to get a quick phone call here. A lot of people have called in, so we don't have a lot of time left in a second because some of our guests have to get to work, and and we also have to move on to our next segment. So the number is 410-319-8888. Let me go to Dale. You're on the air in Greenmount West. It's been a long time, Dale. Welcome.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Very well.
I'll keep it real quick. My question is, both parties are trying to make two wrongs, a right out of wrongs. And I don't understand. I understand that these folks are outraged at what happened. And my condolences are to the families on both sides that have suffered loss. But the Palestinians, they need to get their house in order and start criticizing the people that call themselves representing them, because Ray Charles could have seen this coming. They kidnapped them young men, whoever did it, and killed those young men. And for whatever reason, they thought it was right and couldn't have foreseen that these kind of reprisals were going to happen. There's got to be some soul-searching on both party sides, and they've got to be brave enough to start criticizing these people that claim they're representing them. And there are a bunch of psychopaths that are keeping this thing going. They're not interested in resolving the problem. They're interested in
okay. I'm only interrupting, Dale. It's been great to hear from you. We haven't heard from you in a long time. I'm glad you're calling in again. But we only have like 5 minutes left in this segment because we have another segment coming up behind it. But I'd like to take your response to what you're saying in kind of a broader political sense and not just the personal sense that we're kind of narrowing this down to. And I want to hear from Leah Tarachansky, but first Maria Brody, who is in the studio. Let me let Maria respond and then go to Leah for a response.
I think what I'm hearing is that violence is not an answer to this conflict, nor any conflicts, and that the extremists that use violence just prove that violence begets more violence, and there needs to be a genuine political desire for peaceful negotiation, with the recognition that the Palestinian people have been displaced, their land's been taken by a people who were displaced, who were attacked horribly, discriminated against horribly. So there has to be, yes, a lot of soul searching and a real desire to recognize each other as human beings, to recognize the pain and the injustices that have been committed against the Jewish people of the world. And now because the Palestinians are displaced throughout the world, the Palestinian people throughout the world, here in Baltimore, in Shafat, in Gaza, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, and I could go on. So, because now we have two diasporas. Yes, sir.
No, I'm just, and Leah Tarachansky, before we run out of time, I just kind of put this again in this political context because there's a danger always of kind of making this a personal war, which also leads to the kind of insane vengeance that's placed inside of Israel right now. But talk a bit about this on a political level. What to respond to what Dan was saying?
I have to say I agree with you, Mark, in the sense that I don't understand why it is so invisible to people outside of this place. This is not about some kind of ancient religious war between cousins that hate each other. We're talking about a complex, intelligent, strategic political system that is based on more or less colonial practices. You in America were fighting for civil rights, for the same rights for blacks as you have for whites. Did someone come to you and say, oh, you know, violence is the problem? Violence is just a tool. Violence is used daily, profoundly, by armies all over the world, not just Israel. The violence, the methods, is not the point. It's the intention that's the point. What I'm trying to get at is, you fought for your citizens to have equal rights. Well, here in Israel, right now, this is what we're doing. Inside Israel, which you call a democracy, we have a different set of laws for Jews and non-Jews. We are holding half of the population under a military occupation, and it is daily targeted by extreme military violence. So what are we talking about here? Like, in the U.S., things got very ugly before they started getting better. That's where we're at right now. Things now are at such a level, for the first time, the government is more or less turning a blind eye to fascist attacks where settlers are kidnapping people and trying to kill them.
And soldiers are kidnapping children and trying to kill them, as the video of Tariq shows. And yes, I know Tariq is an American citizen. He's getting this attention because of his American citizenship. But this is happening to Palestinians. This has been happening, you know, throughout the occupation,
murder,
throughout the history of this conflict.
Murder is murder, be it Jewish or Palestinian blood. That's what we want to state.
Yes.
And it's wrong.
I hear you, but it's not about – I hear you. And I cannot imagine the pain that you're going through right now, except for losing my own, you know, loved ones in this idiotic conflict. But what I'm saying in the end of the day is that we are in a turning point now. Things are now getting completely out of control.
It's true.
And it is very obvious to the whole world right now that Israel is not going to change direction from the inside.
Yes.
There is no political will for it. There is no civilian will for it. There's no government leadership, not on our side, not between Fatah, not between Hamas, not on the Palestinian side.
And I think that's why the United States government needs to play a role in this and not just, you know, allowing the Israelis to do whatever, whenever, without any kind of sanctions. We fund Israel. We can stop this. The United States government can put a stop to this.
So let me try to get a quick call in here. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Sabrina. You're on the air. Sabrina, you're on the air.
Hello?
Good morning, Sabrina. You're on the air.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I agree with just that last statement that she said there, and that was my point of calling in, because unfortunately the United States has been consenting for a number of years since the Palestinian lands have been taken. And the interesting thing of it is that we have a lot of people, even from Baltimore, that go over and it's their mission to go over and fight for the Israeli army, including the mayor of Chicago. My question is this. Because of this happening recent development, and as we know, it's been going on for years and years, and I know how they tried to make a football out of Rachel Corrie, which unfortunately there's a Lee Kaplan that's spilling out unnecessary, wrongful messages of her and trying to make her death look wrong. And you know, in the eyes of just Israel, trying to make it seem like she was a terrorist
fighter,
and that not being the case. But my question, as far as yes, this person is an American citizen, more importantly from Baltimore. What are the state officials and Obama doing about as for action? If anything, this should be like they do anywhere else, is saying, all right, Israel, bad Israel, take these sanctions and everything that we put the military aid in place here. You've gone too far. Because the horrifying situation of it is, like you said, there's going to be a lot more until they do that.
So the
leadership in Baltimore spoken out about this, and are they putting legislation in place to move forward?
Sabrina, thanks so much for calling. I'm always interrupting because we only have like a minute and a half left in the segment. But let me ask the Abu Qadir family. You met with the State Department yesterday.
Family members in Florida met with the State Department. Also, Tariq's father and mother met in Jerusalem with one of officials from State Department.
So did anything come of that at all?
We don't know yet. Also, we're working with CAIR, C-A-I-R,
yep.
And they're actually helping us figure out
what. But nothing official yet.
Nothing official.
And have you heard anything from the mayor of Baltimore since
nothing.
Tariq is a...
Not a word.
Not a word from the mayor's office in Baltimore.
Not a word.
Just wanted to put that on the table as well. I do want to... We have about 2 minutes left here, so I'd like to get a chance to... Should we get one more call in here, or should just one quick call, 410-319-8888. Michael, on the air. We have like 30 seconds to hear you. Go ahead.
Yes, Mark. First of all, Western thought is that a person can be educated to be a refined, compassionate individual, and his essence has little relevance to what he is as a human being. John Locke who said that a person is born...
We have 30 seconds for you, Michael. You have to get to a point. I can't have you give a whole speech right now.
All right. So the point is that this struggle is a religious struggle, that the Yishmael is called a wild ass of a man, who his hand will be against his brothers and theirs against his. And so it's something essential. It's essentialism. It's the nature of them to make a sacrament out of murdering people.
All right, Michael, I thank you for that call, but I think that therein lies the heart of the issue, Leah, part of the heart of the issue anyway.
I'm sorry.
I think therein lies part of the heart of the problem, what we just heard Michael say.
That it's a religious conflict?
That point of view that it's in the Arab blood, that they're the ones who are the problem.
Listen, I mean, what can you say to that? I grew up in Israel, yeah? I grew up in this country. I couldn't wait to join the army and kill Arabs. In my heart of heart, I believed that I was going to do something good for this country if I could help in their, you know, in some way instigate them to leave this place. The hatred between the people is so deep now, and it's so, you know, 66 years, you can say 100 years of conflict. Mm-hmm. It's not about the people. In South Africa, if you ask the average white person before the apartheid fell in 94, you know, do you hate black people? They probably would give you some sort of racist-based answer. But this is not the point. The point is, when apartheid ended, all of a sudden everyone was against apartheid. All of a sudden everyone said, well, I never supported apartheid. I'm for civil rights. Because the mood in the world changed. Because it no longer was acceptable. Here in Israel, by sitting quietly and not doing anything, the U.S. is sanctioning both legal, military, and civil racist attacks and racism. There's no other way of putting it. When you have one country where one group of people based on their ethnicity has one set of rights and another group which has been living here for centuries, maybe thousands of years, has a secondary rights based on their ethnicity, what do you call that? Every day that goes by that America gifts us with new fighting arms, it's not just sanctioning. This is an American interest to keep Israel in as an outpost of American imperial power in the world.
Yes.
So as long as you continue doing that, We are going to continue doing whatever we want.
Yes.
So,
it's not being a good friend. If you're seeing your friends go around the street and murdering people, is it good for you to just say, well, look, we don't want to disturb, you know, the water, we don't want to criticize you? That's not being a good friend. If the United States wants to be a good friend to Israel, if it actually cares about the Jewish people, if you actually care about us, please help us stop this insanity.
Yes. Amen. Amen to that.
And that's Maria Bruder. Maria, we really have like 10, 15 seconds. We have a final thought. Please give it to us. I know you.
No, just thank you for giving us
it's actually a pleasure
the opportunity
to speak to her also.
Yes.
I would really appreciate that.
Yes, I'd love to meet Leah. Yes, thank you. Shukran.
Thank you.
It would be my honor.
Ma salama.
Maria Baroudi is with us in studio. Her daughter, Zahia Abu Qadir, whose father and her husband now are in Israel, I mean, in East Jerusalem at this moment, in Shufat, and Hakim Abu Qadir. Thank you all for coming
to
the studio.
So much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Leah Tehrchansky, once again, thank you so much for doing the work you do and joining us, and please look at her work and other people's work at realnews.com. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a very brief break. We're going out here with a short piece of music as we go to this break. Johnny Cash began his career on this day, so it's Folsom Prison Blues, another appropriate song. We'll be right back with our next segment on what happened to Hopkins and their union.
There's rich folks eating in a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me.